Welcome to NFP for Life with Dr. Les and Betty Ruppersberger. Dr. Ruppersberger is a board-certified OBGYN with an NFP-only practice in Langhorne, Pennsylvania. He and his wife, Betty, are both certified natural family planning instructors for the Family Life Office of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia.
Our program today is going to be a recap of our recent conference that we had over at Our Lady of Good Counsel Parish on Saturday, May 1st, called The Bitter Pill, The Truth About Hormonal Contraception. I conceived of this topic probably about 6 months ago in relationship to everything that's been going on about controversy over the pill. And Betty's got some information just recently from this week from the National Catholic Register. There have been many articles in many publications over the past several weeks that we're now, although the paper says celebrating, I say mourning the 50-year anniversary of the pill being on the market in the United States. So we're going to go through the topics one by one through each of the individual speakers. We had a beautiful day. We had about 65 people attend altogether. It was sponsored by St. Mary Medical Center, the Catholic Medical Association, Philadelphia Guild, and the Philadelphia Natural Family Planning Network. And we were graciously hosted by Our Lady of Good Counsel Parish and Monsignor D'Angelico, who graciously provided us with the opportunity to access Trinity Parish Hall. And I think that everyone enjoyed the day and enjoyed the camaraderie. And although we had a little bit of a low turnout, I think we were competing a little bit with some First Holy Communions and some spring baseball and soccer and some other events. So to get started, I began the program by making some comments about it being the 50-year anniversary of the pill and some of the issues that involve that particular anniversary, and talked a little bit about Humanae Vitae from 1968. Pope Paul VI wrote that encyclical July 25th, 1968, in response to a question from Vatican II and a council that was implemented by Pope John the 23rd to take a look at church teaching on contraception and its place in married life. For many of you who may not know, prior to 1930, all Christian churches taught that contraception was a grave evil. And at the Lambeth Conference in 1930, the Anglican Church opened the door by stipulating that contraception could be used for grave reasons in a marriage only. And since that time, every Christian church has jumped on the bandwagon and basically given its approval for contraception in all its forms, including sterilization. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. And so there are basically three dominant religions in the world that teach that contraception is an evil and not acceptable: the Roman Catholic Church, the Muslim Church, or the Muslim religion, and the Orthodox Jewish religion. The interesting aspect of those faiths and those religions is that 85% of Catholics contracept and do not accept and do not choose to follow the teachings of their church. And yet 95% of Muslims do follow the teachings of their faith and their religion. And so the average number of children that Muslim families have are 5, and the average number of children that Christian families have is about the zero population rate of 2.1 in North America. But we're at a birth rate of 1.1 in Italy, 1.3 in Spain, and 1.7 in Germany. The European nation is currently now not at zero population growth level to replace people that die. For those of you who may be somewhat math challenged like me, you need to, a couple needs to have 2 children to replace the parents. So Betty and I are sitting here in the booth doing our program. If we both died, we would have to leave 2 children behind for there to be the same number of people in the room. So a zero population growth rate is 2.1 to account for miscarriages and spontaneous pregnancy losses. So as I made this introduction, I then proceeded on my talk, which was an overview of the subtlety of evil, and I talked about how hormonal contraception works. I discussed the three different aspects of its function, including a suppression of ovulation, a change in vaginal discharge to make the mucus thicker, and a change in the lining of the uterus, which would prevent a fertilized egg or an embryo or a baby, as I like to call it, from implanting into the wall of the uterus. I then discuss the various attempts at redefining the beginning of life and talked about the need to use proper language and recommended that rather than using the word conception, which has a much broader and much more subjective term or tone associated with it, that the appropriate physiological, anatomic, and medical word would be fertilization, because that's a specific event where the egg and the sperm come together and the 46 chromosomes are together. I then proceeded to discuss use of the pill in the United States. We now have close to 12 million women who use hormonal contraceptives in the United States. It's over 100 million worldwide. I talked about some of the negative effects, including the increased risks for heart attack, stroke, blood clots, phlebitis, the increased risks for breast cancer, which was going to be discussed in much greater detail at another talk. And I also discussed the increased risk for gallbladder disease, liver tumors, and other complications such as depression, increased suicide rates, and all of the failures associated with the pill that, since the pill advertises itself as being 99% effective, that means that 1% of the time it does not work. And with the mentality that people do not want to have children, and that's the purpose why they're contracepting in the first place, that when their contraception fails, that their only other alternative to not have children is abortion. And so I pointed out that contraception is at the root of the tree of abortion, and that in order for us to eliminate abortion in this country and change the mentality and the thought process, we need to eliminate contraception and the efforts needed to be made toward that. I discussed the starting dose in 1960 of the pill was about 180 micrograms of estrogen, and it's now down to 20 micrograms of estrogen. And so the suggestion was that we didn't even know, or they didn't even know, the appropriate dose. And so a lot of women had a lot of side effects, a lot of nausea, vomiting. Basically what the pill does physiologically is that it induces a pseudo-pregnancy. It tells the woman's body by the elevated hormone levels that she's pregnant, so she stops ovulating. It alters her mucus. And so the side effects of the pill are women walk around feeling like they're pregnant all the time. They feel they have breast tenderness, they have fluid retention, they have bloating, they have some weight gain, they have some changes in their skin, changes in their hair, changes in their appetite, changes in bowel function, all minor side effects, but still nonetheless, 50% of all women discontinue their pill within the first 6 months because of complications and side effects associated with it. I also pointed out that there are deaths every year that are associated with the pill, and that fertility is not a disease and that it does not need to be medicated. And I pointed out the cost economically, that at 60 some dollars a pack times 12 million women monthly, that it runs into the billions of dollars every year that pharmaceutical companies are making. I also discussed some of the legal aspects, medical legally. There are now class action suits against several of the larger manufacturers of the hormonal contraceptives throughout the United States, especially the patch and the vaginal ring, and that they have some information scientifically that the absorption rates of the hormones from these products are a lot higher than they originally anticipated, and that a lot of women are having a lot of side effects and a lot of issues associated with that. We then got into talking about the post-fertilization or abortifacient aspect of the pill, where it prevents implantation. This is documented in every package insert for all of the hormonal contraceptives. And as a result, it has the potential in its failing to prevent ovulation and in its failing to alter the mucus, because there are pregnancies that occur, that it would also prevent implantation of the baby into the wall of the uterus. And that if you not only calculated the 50 million plus surgical abortions that have occurred legally in the United States since the passage of Roe v. Wade, you would also have to accommodate for the 670 plus or minus million medical abortions that, through various calculations from the Family of the Americas, and would calculate out that the failure rate percentage-wise monthly multiplied times 12 months multiplied times the 12 million women over the last 50 years that the pill's been on the market in the United States, that the potential is there for medical abortions that are not even discussed. And the International Pharmacists for Life have done calculations and have a booklet out in Human Life International that you could access to get more specific information. So I went through some of the health-related issues that a lot of doctors use the pill for and say that these other things cannot be treated. And yet we have Napro technology, which I pointed out, and we were very blessed to have not only Dr. Kyle Biter, who is a certified physician in Napro technology, who just opened a women's health center in New York, St. Gianna's Women's Health Center, on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, December the 8th, 2009. He and his wife were in the audience, but we also had Barbara Rose, who was one of our vendors and had a table with some literature and some information. So we have another alternative to treat cramps and bleeding and acne and some of the other issues with endometriosis and ovarian cysts and various problems like polycystic ovarian disease. So there are other medical alternatives. And I summarize by coming to the conclusion, and I'm doing this in a fairly rapid fashion, that contraception, hormonal contraception, or contraception of any type is intrinsically evil, that it separates the unitive and the procreative aspects of the God-given relationship where the two become one, and that the way of society all runs through the family, as John Paul II has told us, and that as physicians, we are on the front line and we have the primary responsibility to stop foisting these products onto women and calling it women's health. I also talked about some of the prophecies that came from Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae in discussing the increased risks of infidelity, the increase in pornography, the increase in abuse to women, and the increase in objectifying and sexualizing women for man's pleasure, and the significant and rampant epidemic increase in sexually transmitted diseases, where we have 19 million new cases of sexually transmitted diseases every year, one in four teenagers with sexually transmitted diseases every year. So I'll stop right here with my summary, because Betty's given me the high sign,
well,
and she would like to chime in a couple of things.
Yeah, I have a few questions. Before the contraceptive pill, what was the rate of sexually transmitted diseases in women? Do you know?
Well, it was a lot lower. First of all, in 1960, there were only 5 identified sexually transmitted diseases. There are now over 30. Some of that's because of the advancement of science, but the majority of people were not sexually active outside of wedlock. I don't specifically know what the rates were in the 1950s, but I do know that they were a lot lower than they are right now. And we certainly did not have it at epidemic proportions. We also did not have identity of the majority of the incurable sexually transmitted diseases that we're dealing with right now, which are viral, for which we have no medication. We can cure gonorrhea, we can cure syphilis, we can cure chlamydia with antibiotics, but we cannot cure AIDS, the HIV virus. We cannot cure herpes. We cannot cure HPV virus, which we now know causes cervical cancer. We cannot cure hepatitis B or hepatitis C. And so when people become afflicted with these viruses, all of which are sexually transmitted, that they have them for life, they're permanent, and they're incurable, and they could affect their lives and their health.
I know when we got married in 1970, we were required to take a blood test for to get our marriage license. Can you speak to that now in this day and age in 2010?
Well, they did away with the blood tests about 10, 15 years ago. The test was a test for syphilis. And if you tested positive, you could not get a marriage license until you documented to City Hall that you went to your doctor and got treated with antibiotics and that you had a test for cure. Now that we have incurable viral diseases, the point of testing anyone prior to administering a license or issuing a license would be futile. And there was a test case in Michigan where the state of Michigan tried to refuse issuing a license in one of its municipalities to an HIV-positive male. And he sued that municipality and won and took it to the Supreme Court of Michigan. And it was upheld that that testing would not be required. And so it became a federal guideline through the states that no one now is tested to get a marriage license, because what would you do if somebody had hepatitis or AIDS or, you know, HPV? 60% of the population is infected with the HPV virus now. So we want people to get married. We don't want them to be sexually active outside marriage, but they are. And so they wouldn't get a license and they would just cohabit.
I think the intention back in 1960 was that maybe the birth control pill would have its place within a marriage. And that quickly just went like wildfire through the 70s and the sexual revolution, that the sanctity of marriage kind of fell apart. And throughout these past 50 years, the divorce rate has climbed. And the children born out of wedlock has climbed. And it's all related to the contraceptive pill and women's false sense of security that they're protected and provide some knowledge for themselves to be self-sufficient and not have to rely on a man or a marriage. And it just seems like it's such a lie. And what a difficult time so many young women and every age woman has, because they feel so alone and abandoned, really. And I was looking at this article in the National Catholic Register, and on the front page it says the pill at 50. I mean, can you imagine 50 years have gone by? How it has shifted society's moral center. It says in this article that Margaret Sanger hoped it would give women more control, but instead it created a situation in which men have no responsibility. How frightening is that? That men have absolutely no responsibility to care for, to love and nurture and take responsibility for another, to love another as a gift. And unfortunately in today's world, men are not taking responsibility. And even couples, it seems, they're marrying later. They've had multiple partners throughout their lives before they marry. And what kind of sexually transmitted diseases are they bringing into a marriage, maybe unaware or untreatable? And does it affect their fertility?
Well, two issues that you just brought up, and one of them is really ironic, is that Margaret Sanger was the quintessential feminist, mm-hmm. and she was also a eugenist and wanted to create the perfect race and wanted to actually contracept and sterilize out minorities, which is where most of the Planned Parenthoods that she founded, they're in those neighborhoods. But what she didn't realize is that in the conquest of freeing up women, in quotations, that she created, or what was created, was a situation where men have no responsibility. It shifted the weight away from men onto women. And so women have all the responsibility. If a woman does get pregnant, whether she's contracepting or not, she either has to make a choice to carry that child to term and then care for that child, or she has to make the disastrous choice of terminating and killing her baby and then living with that memory and that trauma and that wound for the rest of her life while she goes on with her life, while the male just goes off scot-free to do whatever it is that he wants to do. And then the second aspect that you mentioned with the sexually transmitted diseases is that the majority of men are not symptomatic, especially with the HPV virus, and there's not even a clinical test that's currently available for HPV in males. It's detected on pap smears in females, and it doesn't cause, at least not at high rates, cancer of anything as far as males are concerned, but it is the known cause of cervical cancer in women, and we have 4,000 to 5,000 deaths every year in the United States from cervical cancer, which is completely preventable by being chaste and is a sexually transmitted disease. So we discussed all these issues during this first hour. There was quite a lively question and answer session after my talk with a lot of questions. And we tried to answer as many questions, and we ran a little bit over time, but I think the idea was to give everyone in the audience an overview of what the pill is, what it was originally intended for, how it came about, what it actually does, what it costs, what the effects are on society, socially, economically, from a family point of view. And aside from the moral aspects of it, which, as I said, were discussed a little bit later. And after my discussion, we then introduced Dr. Angela Lamfranchi, who is a breast surgeon practicing in New Jersey since 1984. She's a graduate of Georgetown School of Medicine, clinical assistant professor of surgery at Robert Wood Johnson Medical School, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons, a member of the expert advisory panel for the New Jersey Board of Medical Examiners, and the director and founder of the Breast Care Prevention Institute in Somerville, New Jersey. And that institute is a nonprofit charitable corporation that has as its mission to educate lay and professional communities in the methods of risk reduction and prevention of breast cancer. She has been honored as the top doc for women's health and breast surgery in 2010. She's the author of many articles. She's been published by the National Catholic Bioethics Center, the Institute for Anthropologic Medicine and Bioethics, and the Linacre Quarterly, which is a publication of the Catholic Medical Association. And Angela, when she was introduced, she handed out a very comprehensive CD to everyone in the audience on the scientific literature and public awareness about the link between abortion and breast cancer and the pill and breast cancer. And these links are the who's who and the what's what of science, literature, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the British Medical Journal, the Mayo Clinic Proceedings, oncologic journals, information from England, China, Turkey, all over the world, confirmation, documentation, and specific literature citations and quotes, all of which you can get from her website at the Breast Prevention Cancer Institute.
I thought it fascinating, too, because a lot of her writings and a lot of her articles that she had given us documenting all this evidence is coming from other parts of the world, because in the United States, a lot of this evidence is being suppressed because of the pharmaceutical industry and the amount of money that they generate. And she has absolute positive evidence. And it was so fascinating to listen to her and have her explain exactly what happens. She had slides and video of exactly what it looks like when a woman becomes pregnant, the breast tissue and what it looks like, and what it looks like when it's stopped abruptly from an abortion, and how it will cause cancer cells and can cause issues versus a woman that carried full term and into her pregnancy and delivered. Also, the contraceptive pill. She had so much evidence, and in black and white, she wanted people there to realize that they never have to defend themselves. And if they do, here's the articles, here's the truth. And we're not being told the truth in the United States.
And the ironic thing is that just this past week, last Sunday, mm-hmm. what big event took place locally in the Philadelphia area?
Right. Mother's Day.
And what race?
Oh, yes. The Susan B. Coleman Race for the Cure.
Correct. And here we have an agency who is nationally renowned, if not internationally renowned, who's collecting money from all over the world.
Millions and millions.
To fight breast cancer, which exists 1 in 8 women if you live into the age of 90 currently. The rates used to be 30 years ago, 1 in 14, 1 in 15. Now it's down to 1 in 8. So if you're sitting in a room filled with 8 women, statistically, odds are that one of those women will get breast cancer, and we're now seeing breast cancers at an earlier and earlier age. The average age used to be around in the mid-60s, and now we're seeing women in their 40s and 50s. And so the Susan B. Komen Race for the Cure is out there with the pink ribbons and the breast cancer, and you know,
even the baseball games, they had pink bats.
Right.
The baseball players that were playing on Sunday in the whole league, they were playing with pink bats.
And do you want to speak to why it's ironic that particular association is espousing
unfortunately,
raising money to?
I don't think people realize. I'm sure the intentions are good. But for this organization, they give a large amount of their money to Planned Parenthood. You can confirm that by going online to the Susan B. Coleman Foundation. It is explicit that their money goes to Planned Parenthood. And I was amused because I did go online to check that out. And they made a statement that, yeah, it goes to Planned Parenthood, but we asked them not to put it towards abortions. But they put it toward hormonal contraceptives, which causes breast cancer. The sad part is that a lot of people in this country are not aware that this organization supports Planned Parenthood. And you can quote me if I'm wrong. I was told that 40% of the money that is collected by the Susan B. Coleman Foundation goes to Planned Parenthood. So if you have a loved one who has breast cancer and you want to donate, find a different breast cancer foundation to donate to, and don't encourage Planned Parenthood anymore, because they're the ones that are harming our teenagers and our single women. And it's really causing a problem, and a lot of people are not informed. They have no idea. I certainly didn't know this 5 years ago.
And it's not that all breast cancers come from abortions, and it's not that all breast cancers come from hormonal contraception. The issue is that we're looking at a significantly increased rate of breast cancer. Only 10% of them are genetic, so 90% of them occur what they call de novo, or brand new, in a person who has no family history of breast cancer. And you look at the number of women, 50 million plus, who have had abortions since 1973 with documented irrefutable scientific evidence that Angela presented, that abortion increases the risk of breast cancer. And then you look at the number of women who may have at some point in time taken hormonal contraceptives in the last 50 years since the pill's been on the market, and you literally have hundreds of millions of women who have been either exposed to an early terminated pregnancy where their breast tissue was being rapidly stimulated to grow to prepare for breastfeeding and then abruptly halted by a sudden termination of pregnancy. Angela also went on to explain the difference between a spontaneous miscarriage and a surgical termination or a medical termination of a pregnancy where there are natural defense mechanisms that are produced by the body when the baby dies to stop the ever-increasing rate of growth of the cells in the breast tissue. So she had all the physiology, she had all of the pathology, she had all of the slides, all documented in textbooks of anatomy and surgery and physiology that are well-respected and out in mainstream literature. And then she presented, and these are just a couple of references that she cited, a Mayo Clinic study from 2006 that demonstrated that women who use hormonal contraceptives for a minimum of 4 years prior to their first full-term pregnancy have a 52% higher risk of developing breast cancer. So now think about that. A girl goes on the pill when she's 15, and then she decides to get married when she's 26. She's been on the pill now for 11 years. She waits 2 years after she's married until she's 28 to have her first baby. And so she took the hormonal contraception for 13 years. You only have to be on it for 4 years before your first full-term pregnancy to increase your risk by 52%. Now, when you go off the pill, after 10 years, your risk goes back to normal. So that effect lasts for 10 years after you go off the pill. And there is some protective mechanism if you have a baby, and even a further protective mechanism if you breastfeed that baby for at least 6 months and preferably a year. And so there are natural, built-in, God-given, biologic ways of being able to protect against breast cancer. She also went on to say that women who have used hormonal contraceptives for more than 5 years are 4 times more likely to develop cervical cancer, and that prior to the sexual revolution, as I mentioned, there were only 5 sexually transmitted diseases, and now there are over 30, and that it also increases the risk for HIV because it suppresses the immune defenses. So all of the things that were discussed by Pope Paul VI in Humanae Vitae, and a lot of what I touched upon was elaborated in even greater detail, and you could see the passion in Angela's presentation as a woman, mm-hmm. and as a mother, yep. and as a wife, and as an advocate for women who is dealing with breast cancer every single solitary day, having to walk into a room and take a woman's history and say, well, how many times have you been pregnant? 3. How many children do you have? 2. What happened to the other pregnancy? I had an abortion when I was 19. Have you ever been on the pill? Yes. How long did you take it? On and off for 10 or 15 years. And then she's 42 years old, has an abnormal mammogram, goes in and gets a biopsy, and wants to know that nobody in her family had breast cancer, how she ended up with breast cancer. Right. And nobody's talking about that on the mainstream media and
exactly.
television.
And in her talk, Dr. Lanfranchi also spoke of her frustration with the media and the press media, most especially criticizing people like her as a physician, that she would stand up and speak out about this. And that's why she's so adamant about the proof and the documentation to prove every single one of them, every single piece of the media wrong. She wants to prove it because she really cares about women and she really cares about their bodies and she cares about their families. She wants them to live a good life with their families, and women are not being told the truth. And it really, really concerns her. So, you know, if you have daughters, young, middle-aged, teenage, whatever, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, don't be afraid to just question. You throw the question out to them. They may poo-poo it, but there's evidence out there, and with today's internet, you can find the answers. But most especially, and it really disturbs me that a lot of people don't understand that the Susan B. Komen Foundation is donating so much money to Planned Parenthood. And it's not just the race for the cure. It's all the pink ribbons, all the pink everything that you buy in the store is all going towards the Susan B. Komen Foundation. Every time I go to the supermarket, I go to the card store, everybody wants money for this organization.
Well, I would suspect to not defend Susan B. Komen Foundation, because the majority of their money does go to breast cancer research. A small percentage of it goes to Planned Parenthood. They are probably ignorant of the facts. They probably
I agree with that.
Are not exposed to the scientific literature that's out there. They're probably not exposed to what Planned Parenthood is really doing. They think that Planned Parenthood is helping women in preventing abortions and preventing pregnancies by providing them with contraception and sexual counseling and everything that they promote on their website. So they didn't do their homework. This is not a Susan B. Komen bashing session. It's just an observation relative to, you can check it out, the statistics and the facts. But the important aspect of these two first two talks is that with nothing but science showing that the pill and abortion are harmful to women, without even discussing the morality, we provided 2 hours of documented evidence that shows that women
Absolutely.
Are being harmed by what's going on out there, and they don't even know it. There were many women in the audience, some of them a lot younger, some of them a little bit older, so hopefully they will go out and take the message out and spread the word. We are in the process, for those of you who may be interested, in copying the audio portion of the talks that we gave. Some of it will not translate very well because of the slides that were being presented. Unfortunately, we did not have the financial wherewithal to arrange a video audio copying of the conference, but at least we got the audio, and that's now being broken down into the talks. And then we took a break, and our third speaker was kind of our keynote speaker.
Right.
And a very interesting individual. And for those of you who may not be aware, Betty will read a little bit of the bibliography of who Brian Gale is and start talking a little bit about what his books are about.
Brian Gale is a former college and semi-pro athlete and Madison Avenue ad man and a Fortune 500 senior executive. Entrepreneur and a CEO. He is currently an educator and an author and has served on numerous civic boards in his hometown of Philadelphia, including the National Adoption Center, the William Booth Society, the St. Charles Borromeo Seminary, and the Regina Academies. He is a husband, father of 7, grandfather of 5, and he and his wife of 40 years, Joan Gale, live in Villanova, Pennsylvania. And I was delighted to meet Brian Gale. I read his book, Fatherless. I loved it. It was a great novel, but it had a great message also. So if you haven't read this book, Fatherless, by Brian Gale, it's a critically acclaimed novel, and it's a great story. On the cover, it says, "This is a storytelling at its heart." This is storytelling at its heart, pounding, page turning, masterful best by the Philadelphia Bulletin, and just great praises for Brian Gale. On the back cover, he has quotations from Janet Smith and Christopher West. And if you want a great book for the beach or the weather's changing now, it's a great novel. Think about reading it. It's wonderful. And
the premise behind it is that Brian, as a retired businessman, as Betty mentioned, is the father of 7 and thoroughly disgusted with our culture and thoroughly disgusted with the culture of death. And he feels that, as he spoke during his talk, that he is personally responsible, along with his generation into creating the culture of death, or at least contributing to the culture of death by participating in the sex, drugs, rock and roll of the 50s, the permissiveness that went on into families, the relaxed attitudes toward everything as far as how we discipline our children, a work ethic, a moral ethic, a social ethic, manners. And he is writing a trilogy against the culture of death. So his first book, Fatherless, as Betty mentioned, has been in publication now, and it's in its third printing. It's published now by Human Life International, the organization founded by Father Eitenhauer, and you can find it on their website at hli.org. We only ordered 50 books, and he sat there and signed all the books.
And they went and in personally, a matter of 20 minutes.
And people were buying 3 and 4 and 5 books, and it is a great gift. And if you want to pass along a message and give somebody something to read that they would be interested in, to your kids, your brothers, your sisters, your friends or whatever, you know, buy a couple of these books and give them out for anniversaries, birthdays. I think we gave out 10 last Christmas
right.
as
and
gifts to friends.
A lot
friends.
Of people were purchasing them for Father's Day. And also, it would be a great graduation gift. So it's a great gift. You'll really enjoy the novel. It's a great read.
And he just finished writing his second entry into the trilogy called Motherless. It's in editing right now. It should be published by the end of the year and out on the market. And then next year he will finish the third arm of the trilogy, which will be called Childless. And so the entire focus is to talk about the family and talk about what has happened in the family. And in this particular book of Fatherless, although it's a fiction, all the characters are based on factual, real characters, one of which is Brian and his family himself. And all the other characters, including individuals like the president of the Catholic Medical Association and Chris Callenborn, who's another physician who has written extensively on the ABCs of the breast cancer abortion link, who has his own website, polycarp.org, polycarp.org, another website that you can go to and get all the scientific information. But Brian spoke very eloquently about the contributions of the absence of fathers from families, the breakdown of men being men, and moving in a direction away from manhood and away from strength of character and away from honesty and integrity and away from the manners and the respect and the reverence that men should have for women, and elevating them and elevating the family to men that Betty spoke of earlier that are being emasculinated basically by the pill and hormonal contraceptives and the feminist movement and women's lib and women becoming stronger and competing with men and wanting to be equal to men. And women are equal to men, but they're different. And the differences will never come together, although the androgynous movement and the gender sex reassignment movement are all moving in that direction. So Brian gave a very passionate plea to bring back the family. He gave a very passionate plea to bring back manhood and to raise your boys to be men and raise your girls to be women. And he spoke very passionately and very strongly about his dedication to his family and some of the pain and some of the difficulties that they've had to experience throughout their lives in trying to deal with some of the issues. So I don't know if Betty, if you want to speak about anything else that Brian spoke of or from the book before we move on.
Well, the theme being fatherless also, he brought up the aspect of not just fathers in the household, but fathers in our parishes, meaning the priest of our parishes, and the culture that has been going on for years, and how you know, we're not being shepherded the way we should. And, you know, they let things slide because when Humani Vitae came in, was written by Pope Paul VI, a lot of priests, deacons, bishops, they didn't agree with the Pope. That hurt our church tremendously. They did not stand up for what was right, and they misguided a lot of Catholics. I really truly believe that all of this is turning around, most especially with John Paul II's theology of the body. But, you know, we have to realize that, you know, this culture, this contraceptive culture, it seeps not just through the family, but through all of society, all the way through our religious too. I mean, when you think about it, in today's society, there's less priests, there's less Catholic nuns, you know, the breakdown of the family, everything contraceptively, this contraception mentality has let us fall apart. And even in the National Catholic Register, this quote just really got me. It's become very burdensome for women to have this mentality. You know, it's very difficult as a woman. They're raising children on their own. They're concerned about their health and their finances. And, you know, it's not easy to live this mentality and always looking, you know, not having a firm commitment from a man. That's not the way it was meant to be.
And that's the irony of the whole thing, because all the burden of responsibility is on the woman. She has to worry about the contraception. She has to worry about taking the medication. She has to worry about the side effects. She has to worry about remembering. She has to suppress her own biology and her own physiology and constantly be medicating herself with strong steroids when she's not sick. She needs to worry about the consequences that if her contraceptive doesn't work, what's she going to do with the pregnancy? Because the pregnancy and the baby are in her body. They're not in the male body. So she has all of the burden, all the responsibility. So instead of freeing women, it enslaves women. And it emasculates men, and it destroys the family. And one of the ironic things, you know, I mentioned a little bit earlier that Brian's book, Fatherless, is a fiction. But for a fiction, this guy wrote a bibliography in the back of his book, and I just want to read a couple of the references. The contraception of grief, the genesis of anguish, conceived by abortifacients and sterilization, Teresa Burke, the founder of Rachel's Vineyard.
Wow.
The decline and fall of the Catholic Church in America.
He did bring that up. He said that, you know, in the 60s, 50s and 60s, 75% of Catholics attended Mass on Sunday. So that structurally, the infrastructure had to be built to handle 75% of the Catholics practicing their faith. And now, in today's society, only 25% of Catholics are practicing their faith, going to Mass regularly. And we, 25%, are trying to maintain all the infrastructure, all the property, all the schools that were built to handle the large amount of Catholics that were practicing their faith back in the 50s and 60s. So, you know, our whole society has changed greatly. And it does amaze me when I hear Catholics so disappointed that their Catholic school or their parish is closing, when in fact it just can't be maintained if people aren't going to go and maintain it.
Couple of other resources that he cited, Bishop Chaput's Render Unto Caesar, Serving Our Nation by Living Our Catholic Beliefs in Political Life, an interview with an exorcist from Father Jose Fortea, Chris Callenporn's book, Breast Cancer, Its Link to Abortion and the Pill, Pharmaceutical Hormones and Other Organic Wastewater Contaminants in U.S. Streams, a national reconnaissance. We talked about the environment and women urinating these hormones into wastewater and not being able to be filled out, so there are higher estrogen levels in our drinking water. Infant homicides through contraception. A Catholic priest is a moral teacher and a guide. Contraception and Catholicism. The cafeteria Catholic. Catholics and contraception in American history. The empty promise of contraception, what four decades of the pill has conceived, Christopher West, The Universal Message of John Paul II's Theology of the Body. I mean, you want to talk about a Catholic's who's who bibliography in a book of fiction. I mean, this guy was amazing. So that was the cog, the center, the axle, if you will, of the wheel of the entire conference. We had a great lunch provided by the Liberty Bell Caterers.
And paid for by St. Mary.
Mary Medical Center, who have been gracious and very generous. This was our 8th annual conference. And then as we got into the afternoon, we opened with our speaker, Teresa Kuhar. And Betty, why don't you read her bibliography?
And I was so amused by Teresa because she was so entertaining. And she got up there and she said she was a proud alumni of Little Flower High School for Girls, which I also went to, and Holy Family University School of Nursing. And she divides her professional time between the emergency departments of Holy Redeemer Hospital and St. Mary Medical Center. And she has, in her free time, she serves as a childbirth and parenting educator for CORA's Lifeline program. And she is helping to establish a community of life in Philadelphia in association with the Sisters of Life of New York City. And she's been married for 22 years, and she's been blessed, her and her husband, Chuck, blessed with 6 children, 4 boys, 2 girls, and they're a member of St. Cecilia's Parish in Northeast Philadelphia. And she started out with a lot of slides and some videos, and she was really into MTV and commercials and things like that, and she showed the first MTV video. And I can't even remember the group that sang, but they showed one guy and 2 girls singing at the microphone. And one girl was very, you know, covered up with her dress, long sleeves, and very modestly dressed. The other girl had a little bit of her shoulders showing. And she wanted to impress upon people how lifestyles have changed since 1960. And then she went on to show a video of today's hot record. I think it was called TikTok by Keisha, and how that video has changed everything. I never saw this video before because I don't watch music videos, but it was very eye-opening and a little bit horrifying. You saw the 17-year-old in a bathtub, intoxicated, waking up the next morning. She goes to her kitchen. Her parents are arguing with her. And it was just so inappropriate for a young girl like that to be dressed like that, to be acting like that. So she wanted to make that awareness about how our society has changed. And then she went on and she showed commercials and all these different commercials about hormonal contraception, about how women are just so happy. And they're dancing and they're flighty and they're very airy about everything. They're walking around in these like little nightgowns, tiptoeing through the woods and skipping and things like that. And it was kind of amusing because she kept pointing things out in these commercials. But one of the most amazing thing and most predominant thing in the commercials were there were no men. Absolutely no men, because men are out of the equation as far as the contraceptive mentality goes. So these were young women. They were not married women. They were just contracepting, and wasn't it wonderful? And then they would tell all the bad, ill effects of the contraceptive pill, but nobody's ears were open, as they are not today. And the commercials that she showed are not even on television as we speak, because some of these pills have been pulled from the market, the ortho Everett patch, things like that have been pulled off the market. So, you know, it's not as pleasant as it appears. But she really wanted to point out how difficult it is in society for our friends and our families that don't really understand this message to accept this message that, you know, we're being overly judgmental and things like that. And in fact, we're really not. It's the truth, and we're being brainwashed into this culture. So she wanted to bring that, you know, those points up and help us women understand how we are being made a disservice by the media.
And being sucked in and being held responsible and liable. And her title, her topic, was A Woman's Perspective, and she broke it down first as a wife, then as a mother, and then as a daughter, as a sister, as a nurse, and as a woman. And she divided it into all the aspects of her life and explained how it fit in with her children and having children and some of the issues that she had personally and medically and what she sees in the emergency room with young women coming in with blood clots as a complication from being on the pill. And when asked if they're on any medication, they say no. And then 15 minutes later, they say, are you sure you're not on any medication? No. And then finally say, are you really not on any medication? Well, I'm on the pill, but that's not really medicine.
Right.
And so these commercials, you know, make it sound like it's a vitamin, like it's a tonic, like it's something that everybody should be doing and everybody should be involved in and engaging in. And so it just diminishes and brain deadens people's concept that this is a pharmaceutical product that's extremely strong, that's only available by prescription, at least in this country. So she finished up very light, very humorous, very factual, lots of statistical information. And then our final speaker, as we wind down to about 3.5 minutes, not to do Father Bokansky a disservice, but Father came in at the end to discuss a total gift, moral and pastoral aspects of contraception. He's a native of suburban Philadelphia and received his degree in Master of Arts in Theology from St. Charles Borromeo and was ordained a priest in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia in May of 1999. In 2004, he joined the Philadelphia Congregation of the Oratory of St. Philip Neri, a society of apostolic life founded in Rome in 1575. He has a dedication for formation of the laity, especially young adults, through teaching, preaching, and celebration of the sacraments. He's responsible for pastoral care at St. Francis Xavier Parish in the Fairmount neighborhood of Center City, Philadelphia. And he is the chaplain for the Philadelphia Guild of the Catholic Medical Association. He is a frequent presenter of lectures on courses on parish and archdiocesan levels. He was the lead author of the working paper on adult faith formation for the 10th Synod of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. He's co-authored several works on local church history. And Father very quietly and very calmly spoke as to the morality and basically said that the pill is intrinsically evil, that this separates the unitive and the procreative aspects, and that from a pastoral point of view, a priest has to very gently and very intelligently find a ground, find a way, find a method by which he can put himself on a plane of where these people are and then engage them in the conversation without whacking them over the head and telling them, you sinner, you committed a mortal sin, you're a bad person, and you better stop doing what you're doing right now. So there were a lot of questions and answers to Father at the end of his talk. But he gave a very kind and gentle and very interesting perspective as to how to approach some of these questions and some of these issues. He obviously could not get into personal confessional issues, but he did speak directly to church teaching on theology and morality, John Paul II, Theology of the Body, a lot of his works with a lot of encyclical references. He had slides to document and a lot of discussion relative to St. Philip Neri and his ministry to young people. So it was a great day. We had a great conference. We are looking forward to having them in the future. And as we wind up with the end of our program, we'll have Betty end with a short Hail Mary.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Our Lady of Guadalupe,
pray for us.
Thank you, and stay tuned next month for NFP for Life, and thanks for joining us. God bless.
And God bless you.